is the Talking Tigers Podcast, presented by the Alabama Department of Public Health. Don't wait. Vaccinate. Protect yourself and others against COVID and flu. For more information, visit alabamapublichealth.gov/IMM. Here's Andy Burcham with another Talking Tigers Podcast.
Cliff Ellis was honored last weekend as Auburn's legend at the SEC Men's Basketball Tournament. He recently retired from coaching, most recently at Coastal Carolina. Ellis is one of four coaches in NCAA Division I history to take four different schools to the NCAA Tournament. At South Alabama, Clemson, Auburn, and Coastal Carolina, he notched at least 170 wins at each school, the only coach in NCAA Division I history to do so. Cliff Ellis is featured in this Talking Tigers podcast, brought to you by Alabama Public Health.
Welcome into a special edition of the Talking Tigers podcast. We're talking to an Auburn legend today. He was honored by the Southeastern Conference as Auburn's legend at the SEC basketball tournament. He is one of the all-time winningest coaches in NCAA history, a former Auburn, a great as well. And Cliff Ellis joins us today. Welcome, Coach, and War Eagle. Glad to have you with us today.
War Eagle, it's good to be with you.
Coach, what is it like for you now as a retired coach? You've done it for such a long, long time, and now you've decided after so many years to step away from the game. We think anyway, right?
Well, that I'm done. No stress. Well, I'm 78 years of age. The game has changed, but I've had a great run. I've loved every place that I've been. Auburn was a very special place, and so it's time for me to move on and give some time to my family. The game's changed. You know, I don't like where the game is. The system's broke. I think it's unsustainable. When this NIL and transfer portal came out, that was enough. I said, this is not me. This is not how I envision college athletics. So let's just take all of our marbles and move on.
Ninth all-time winningest coach in NCAA Division I history with 831 wins at South Alabama, Clemson, Auburn, and Coastal Carolina. I remember when you were at Auburn, you talked about your love of basketball and your love of going to junior college games when you were early in your career and growing up. I mean, was that the start of the love of basketball for Cliff Ellis?
Well, the love of it came when I was a young kid. I knew in the eighth grade that I wanted to coach. I had a coach that his name was Philip Roundtree. Back in those days, they taught you baseball, football, basketball. He even taught me how to swim. You know, I just loved what he stood for. And, you know, baseball was actually my first love. But basketball was right there at an early age because at 9 years old, you're playing Little League baseball. There's not much going on as a nine-year-old back in those days for basketball. But anyway, I did start going to junior college basketball games because there were some local junior colleges. I was raised in Shipley, Florida. You had Chipola Junior College and Gulf Coast, Pensacola, Okaloosa, Walton, now Northwest. And those teams were playing basketball, so you could see great basketball. And I really loved that. But I loved playing and I loved the game. So anyway, it all worked out, but it was due to a guy by the name of Philip Roundtree, who is a great human being, and I wanted to be like him.
What was the first coaching stop for Cliff Ellis?
Ruckel Junior High School, Niceville, Florida, 1968. Fired up, coming out of Florida State. You know, I'd mentored under Hugh Durham. I didn't play there, but Milton Johnson at Chipola Junior College and there were three guys that were really my mentors. Hugh Durham was one, Milton Johnson, Marvin Beck, who was at the University of West Florida. Those three guys right there set the tone for what I initially set forth as my philosophy. Coach Durham liked to press and run. And back in those days, in the late 60s, there wasn't a lot of that going on. And, you know, I utilized that in my early days, and it worked and provided success. And I went on to high school coaching. And at the age of 26, I'd finished my master's degree at Middle Tennessee State University, written a magazine article on the zone prep, on the 131 zone. And it turned into a book. And that really allowed me to, it was impressive to college presidents because they're in the research and things of that type. I was able to get my first job as a college coach at Cumberland College, which is now Cumberland University, and it was a law school at one time that moved to Samford. The Cumberland Law School was in Lebanon, Tennessee to start with, and that was my first job. And then I went to South Alabama from there and, you know, had good teams. You know, you move, if you've got good teams, you move up. And I was fortunate to have good teams wherever I've been.
Coach, you're the second person on this podcast that's been a head coach at South Alabama. We had Rex Frederick on about a month ago, and he was the first coach there at Southport.
He was. He was a good friend. He was very supportive of me while I was in Mobile. And, of course, he's an Auburn legend. He's one of the finest players to ever put on an Auburn uniform.
Coach, talk about that transition then from South Alabama to Clemson.
Well, I'll tell you what, Andy, it's a crazy story. At South Alabama, when I met with the president, Dr. Fred Whidden, I was 29 years old at the time. I was the youngest Division I coach along with a guy at Army by the name of Mike Krzyzewski. You might know who that is. We were the youngest coaches in Division I. And the president was from Newville, Alabama, which is down near Abbeville, wasn't far from my hometown in Chipley. So we kind of understood where we came from. But he said, Cliff, he said, I think we've made a mistake going Division II. We're going to give you 3 years to turn this program. You know, on that third year, we go to the NCAA tournament and we play Louisville in the first round, and we go into the Sun Belt Conference. We started the Sun Belt Conference. We were able to win 3 championships. They've never looked back on going Division II, and I'm very proud of that. Those times at South Alabama. And I was named the AD in 1980. We didn't have football. Eddie Stanky was the baseball coach, and Clemson came and offered me the job. The guy, Dwight Rainey, was assistant athletic director. He was actually at a University of Alabama Clemson baseball game, called me up and said, would you like to be the next basketball coach at Clemson? I said, no, you guys don't win. You're not committed. I said, I've got a better job. And he said, really? And I said, yeah, I got it. Well, I'd had a commitment from a guy by the name of Vernon Maxwell at South Alabama. Now, we'd had great, you got to keep in mind, in 1981 at South Alabama, we had more people drafted in the NBA than anybody. We had 5 draft choices. We had more than Kentucky, Kansas, UCLA, and we were rolling. We'd been in the top 10. We were rolling. And Vernon Maxwell had committed to sign. And we'd just beaten Florida in a postseason tournament, Norm Sloan. And I think that he probably was so upset. He had not recruited Vernon Maxwell. So I go to Gainesville, Florida to sign Vernon Maxwell. I knock on the door and the mom welcomes me in, and I open the door and the mom and Vernon are sitting there holding hands. And I said, oh my gosh, something's not right here. And she said, Coach, sit down. And she patted her hand and I sat right down to her, and here comes the swan song. She said, Coach, you've done the best job of recruiting my son, Vernon. He really wanted to go to your school, but University of Florida offered him a scholarship today, and he's going to take it. My heart sunk. I just dropped. I said, you know, that's happened so many times with Wimp and Sonny at Alabama and Auburn. I didn't even hardly recruit the state of Alabama. You know, if they wanted them, we weren't going to get them. So I had to go out of the state. And then this had happened so many times. I said, so I went to the airport in Gainesville, Florida, and put a dime in the payphone and called Dwight Rainey and said, if y'all are still interested, I will meet y'all and talk to you about the Clemson job. He said, we'll have a plane pick you up at the Atlanta airport when you land in Atlanta. So I go from Atlanta and I go. They offered me the job. The bottom line is I went and left Mobile, Alabama to sign Vernon Maxwell. And I came back and took the Clemson job, even though people said, you will not be successful there. I mean, I won't name names, but people we respect said, that all that did was kind of be like Dr. Whidden telling me, you got 3 years to turn it around. And you go, I love those challenges. I never was the guy that took the Kentucky, Kansas. I wanted the challenge job. And so I went to Clemson, and in Clemson in 87, we finished second. In 90, we won it. We should have won. We won the ACC. It's the only ACC championship that Clemson's won. And we had a great run for 10 years, and that's how I got to Clemson.
What was the key to the turnaround at Clemson in your mind, Coach?
Horace Grant. Eldon Campbell. Maxwell, Dale Davis, Sherron Wright, Chris Whitney. We had good players, and we caught it at the right time. But now what's great about that is back in those days, I don't think the ACC is what it was back in the in the 80s and 90s, the ACC ruled the roost. There were eight teams. It was the conference, and it was Dean Smith. It was Mike Krzyzewski. It was Jim Valvano. It was Bobby Crimmins, Terry Holland, Lefty Driesell, Carl Tacy. Those are the guys that I was going against. It was an amazing time for college basketball, and to win it there, that is so special because it's so hard. It was so hard. And we not only won it one time, we finished second. And it was just a great run.
When did Auburn come calling, Coach?
I left Clemson and Auburn came right after, came that year. I'd had some good runs, but they had fired Danny Ford as the football coach, and they were making some changes. Back in those days, dorms were being changed. They were taking athletes out of the dorms, and there was just a difference in viewpoints, and I just needed a change. Auburn called, and I was very fortunate to get that opportunity. And at that point in time, Auburn needed a boost. It fit, it's back towards home. And, still today, I would have to say that I've still got so many friends. I mean, so many friends still today from Auburn. The one thing about Auburn is it's a family. Auburn is a place where when you meet somebody, if they go to school at Auburn or they're part of Auburn or pull for Auburn, they're really true Auburn people. I like that. They're very loyal. So anyway, I still got close friends that I stay in contact with that, mean a lot to me. I still serve on Jimmy Raines' board. I've watched his company grow from being a good company to where it is today, and to be a part of him giving scholarships to so many young people. You got great people on the board, Zeke Smith and people like that. You've got a good athletic director, I think, and John Cohen. You got a good new president. Bruce, what a job he's doing. My goodness alive. I mean, it went through a drought after we left. But anyway, to go to Auburn in 94, there was a challenge there. That challenge was to then win one SEC championship, and the challenge was to try to bring another championship. In the early days, it was Pat Burke and Lance Weems that the first year right out of the box, I mean, we did things that nobody thought we could do and had some very good basketball teams. And then came the Chris Porter teams that had Bryant Smith and Marquise Daniels, who's on Bruce Pearl's staff, Damian Fishback, who's doing well, Doc Robinson, Scott Pullman, all those guys, Adrian Chilish, Reggie Sharp, who hit that half-court shot against Alabama. So anyway, that turned it in 99. The thing that impressed me about that team was the fact of how it kind of reminds me of this year's team with Bruce. That team did an astonishing thing. I think they won by an average of 18 or 19 points a game. Their average went, there were blowouts. I mean, I would sit on the bench 10 minutes to go, and we're up 30. I mean, we beat Alabama that year. 33-15. Now, you think about that. Now, that's the rival. And we beat them three times. And the year before that, we'd beaten Alabama, I think it was like 42-16 in halftime, and we beat them so bad. You like to remember those kind of games.
War Eagle, it's a great day for Auburn Tigers to get vaccinated. Many children and adults that delayed vaccinations during the pandemic are still behind schedule. It's crucial that we take steps to get everyone back on track with their routine immunizations. Children and teens can still catch up on their vaccinations even if they start late. Make sure you and your family are all up to date on all recommended vaccines, including COVID-19 and flu. Let's all do our part to get back on track. Don't wait. Vaccinate. For more information, visit alabamapublichealth.gov/IMM.
Is there a single recruit in your mind at Auburn that kind of made that turnaround for you?
I think signing Mr. Basketball out of Alabama and Doc Robinson.
Right.
We signed two Mr. Basketballs. There were three good recruits that were signed that year. Doc Robinson was Mr. Basketball in Alabama. And back in that time, Alabama was getting pretty much every Mr. Basketball. And we really worked hard to try to get that. him doing that. And then Damian Fishback was Mr. Basketball in Kentucky. And then Chris Porter was the unknown out of Abbeville that was just this freak athlete that that was something. But the guy that I think was kind of hidden in all that was Brian Smith. Mm. You know, if you look at that 99 team and the pressing that we put on, his long arms and the way that he played was just unbelievable. And then Scotty Pullman, he was the guy, he was a little Opie. They called him Opie, you know, Opie Taylor. But, you know, I mean, good gracious, he didn't miss shots. He was kind of a glue that went in there. Mamadou Ndiaye, the 7-footer, came in during that time, you know, and he went on to play in the NBA. You know, he was our center at 7 foot. Chris Porter was the 4-man, Bryant Smith the 3, Pullman the 2, Doc Robinson the 1, Damian Fishback was the 6-man, and, you know, we had those guys backing up. But the turning point was signing those Mr. Basketball. So that we knew we had arrived when we started getting those type of people.
You had a history with Damian's family, correct?
Well, his dad played for me at Cumberland, and when Damian was born, I told him his son had a scholarship. Now, I didn't realize he was going to be Mr. Basketball in Kentucky, but yeah, Damian's dad, he and I still talk. He's one of my all-time favorite players. He was as good a player. He's as fine. I never say, people ask me all the time, who's your favorite? Who's the best player you ever coached? I said, I don't have one. I've got a lot of favorites, and Charlie was one of my favorites, and I'm very proud of all those guys and what they've done, because they really set a tone. You know, before Bruce came in, I think that you know, the Rex Frederick era, then the Charles Barkley era with Sonny, and then, you know, our era. Those were the three, and that was a long history. That was a lot of years and not much basketball. But Bruce has got it going where we had it, and, you know, sustaining is the biggest key. But I think in this day and time now with the NIL and transfer portal, it's just a matter of who's got the most money. And I know Auburn people are going to support it, so I believe Bruce will continue to keep it going.
Coach, one of my favorite Auburn teams in any sport was that 2003 Auburn men's basketball team, because you went into the selection day and Dick Vitale, and nothing against Dick. He's saying Auburn doesn't deserve to be in, and you guys get in. And buddy, did you prove everybody wrong by making that Sweet 16 and almost beating the eventual national champs in Syracuse?
If we'd have had another 30 seconds on the clock, we'd have beaten Syracuse. We had them on the ropes. We made a comeback, and we needed another minute on the clock. Syracuse went on to win it. I thought there was two chances we had to win it at all, and that was the 99 team, in which, you know, we go back to Ohio State, you know, we're down by one or something, and we steal the ball, and we got a wide open layup ahead, but the ball's thrown away, and, you know, we don't get a chance to go up. And then if we had another minute to go, but when you get to the Final Four, you get to the Sweet 16, man, you got to have the bounce of the ball. You got to have the bounce of the ball. Sometimes it's going to go your way. Sometimes it's not. You know, you just look at how the ball bounces. I mean, you look at the Virginia win against Auburn, you know, just the bounce of the ball went Virginia's way, and it went Syracuse's way that day. It went Ohio State's way that day. Just sometimes when you get to that, it's final. But we weren't supposed to go anywhere. And by the way, Dick sent all kind of gifts after that, apologizing. But, you know, Dick's going to roll with the flow. But to go in, and that's where Marquise Daniels really came in with regards to it. That team finished second in the SEC West. I think Mississippi State won it that year on our side. But we got to the NCAA, played a great St. Joe's team, went into overtime, won it. And then Wake Forest was the team in that regional, and we were able to take them out, then go to Syracuse. But that was an underdog team. And, you know, but Marquise Daniels was the leader of that group.
What do you think about now? And you've stepped down, you've retired. Your years there in Myrtle Beach at Coastal Carolina, what did that mean to Cliff Ellis?
Well, I thought it was time. I knew that I was going to retire by the end of the year, because really and truly, I feel like you got to be powerful. I really loved that time that I had because it wasn't like Clemson and Auburn. It wasn't Power Five basketball. It was enjoyable. You could coach. You could go home. It didn't have the, but we were able to. I mean, the thing that I'm most proud about at Coastal is we went the NCAA tournament, went to the NIT, went to several postseason tournaments. But the thing we did was we were able to play Power Five schools and win. Bruce was very, but it was in his early years, it was very kind to let us play and come back to Auburn. And my great memories at Coastal Carolina was going back to Clemson and going back to Auburn, places that I coached in South Alabama, and winning at those places. But we'd set the record for most points scored at West Virginia. A lot of people don't know that, but Bob Huggins had some pretty darn good teams. We scored 109 points and set the record at West Virginia. But you don't get the recognition that you deserve there. We beat LSU twice. You know, we had some great wins against Utah. We had some great, great runs. When the transfer portal and NIL came along, all the players that I was coaching were just being taken. I'd coach them, they'd be taken. I said, you know, this is just not me. It's time to get out. So, you know, but I'm also 78 years of age. And I'm on a mission with this, you know, trying to figure out with the transfer portal and the NIL, trying to help people. I've had so many people reach out and say, okay, what do you think? How do we go about this? You know, I've talked with congressmen. I was just visiting with Tommy Tuberville, our Auburn friend, just a couple of weeks ago, and just seeing if we can't get some, you know, get something done here, because as you look at it, this is what I see. First of all, in the NBA and in the NFL, there are contracts, right? Well, these players don't have contracts. There's free agency in the NBA. There's free agency in the NFL. There's no rules with the transfer portal per se with regards to it. It's just crazy. You know, there's no salary cap. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, hey, they used to chase me around for giving T-shirt, you know. Now $1 million won't even get you a quarterback. I mean, come on, where are we headed with this thing, you know? And, I mean, there's got to be some kind of salary cap. I mean, you kidding me? A kid leaves the University of Florida because a $13 million deal fell through? Give me a break. Where's the word student athlete? It's no longer there. And then you've got free agency. At least the NBA and the NFL have rules. Transfer portal, you just pick it up and you can go anytime you want to. True story, contracts. NBA has contract. There's no contract with these kids. You know, they tell them they're going to give them this. They give them that. It's word of mouth. This is a true story. There's a kid that was promised in a Power Five school, promised $500,000. He was a grad student. He went to the school. He played. At the end of the season, he'd gotten $250,000. At the end of the season, he goes and says, okay, I really enjoyed it. Where's my other $250,000? He said, oh, we had an agreement. It'd be $500,000 a year. You've only been here 6 months. We've given you your $250,000. Bye. Now he's suing that university. Now, is that what we need? I mean, and I don't know if these kids – you know, these kids, are they going to school to get an education? And let me preface this by saying, I am for players getting compensated, but we've got to have some rules. We've got, if the NBA and the NFL can do it. So that's my mission. And I think Nick Saban's on this. He's on this as trying to help. There's got to be, but it's got to come from the federal government. We got to get help. It's not going to happen in the next day or so. So at the same point in time, I'm trying to help these guys figure out, okay, how can I do NIL? What can I do? How can I go about it? And, you know, people are tired of just turning around and saying, you know, I need you to give me $50,000. There's no tax write-off, nothing. And I know that to be a fact. I've had too many people say, you know, what to do it. So you got to provide perks. You got to provide perks. And, you know, what I said, and I told, what I tell people, and I told your athlete, I said, one thing I'd do is I'd take your football stadium. I've told several universities this, take your football stadium. All right. I mean, how many people you got at Auburn? 85,000 seats, right? All right. Now, 88,000, and then you got an infield there. How many times you use your football field? 8 to 9 times a year out of 365 days. What I would do is I would bring in Morgan Wallen, or I'd bring in somebody, and I'd have a concert. How many are you going to sell? How about, what, $200 a ticket, you think? That's about $16 million. Now, those artists are going to get half of it. They're going to get half of it. But there's you some money for athletic department. There's some things. So this is what I'm giving you examples of what I'm telling people. I've talked to 15 to 20 universities that have called up and say, hey, what do you do? And the reason I do that, because I was a rock and roll singer.
Yes, you were. Are you still singing?
No, now and then. But back in the day, I played an event. I played on stage with Roy Orbison. Now I'm going back. Some people on this podcast are not even going to know who I'm talking about. But I played with Charlie Rich, and we did concert. And I've watched it work. And if you get the right act and you sell it out, it's just going to make money. And that's how I made money. And so that's what gave me the idea of concerts as my music background. And I'm not saying, you got to have the right act and it's got to be right. But that is a way to do it with regards to it. And, there's all kind of ideas. So, I'm studying all these ideas. I'm trying to help people that need help and want help and give them the ideas that through my 50 years of coaching, as I look back, this is what I think you can do, can't do. But we got to get a hold of this stuff. And this may not be what you wanted to talk about on this podcast, but it led from one direction to another. Sure. So anyway.
Let me wrap it up this way. The only coach in NCAA Division I history with at least 170 wins, that is, at four different schools, one of only four coaches to make multiple NCAA tournament appearances with four different schools. When you look back, have you allowed yourself to look back on that career and look back on the accomplishments of your career?
Well, because of things like this, it's made me do that. And going back to, Cumberland has brought me back. South Alabama's brought me back. Auburn's brought me back. Clemson, every place that I've been has just been, it's been like a victory tour. It's been absolutely wonderful. And, your Chamber of Commerce reached out to me Friday to do, what is the Auburn Trail?
Tiger Trail.
Tiger Trail. And yeah. So I've just got word to do that on April 6th. I had to cancel my Final Four reservations. And I think, so anyway, it reminds you of that. But what you think about is all the great players and the people that have worked with. It's been a team effort. No matter where you are, it's a team effort. I may be the person that gets the spotlight, but it's about a lot of people. And, it goes back to the athletic directors, the administrators, the coaches, the players, the fans. It's a team effort. It's a team effort. And I will always remember that at Auburn. It was a team effort. It was a great run. I'm very proud of what we accomplished at Auburn, and I'm looking forward to, I'm very thankful for Auburn to give me this tribute to the SEC tournament. It's wonderful.
Oh, you deserve every bit of it, Coach. We certainly appreciate your time today. Congratulations on a wonderful career. Thank you for being on our podcast today. War Eagle.
War Eagle.
For Cliff Ellis and the Talking Tigers podcast, brought to you by Alabama Public Health, I'm Andy Burcham. Be strong and be courageous. War Eagle.